Welcome back. This is the Coaches Rising podcast. Today I'm joined by Sophia Mose, who is a certified coach, an IFS level 3 trained practitioner, and she co-designed the IFS Foundations for Coaches training at the IFS Institute. I've really enjoyed my conversations on the finer details of parts work with Sophia over the recent months. So we're going to go into all things parts work today, applying parts work in your coaching practice. And especially if you're already doing that, we're going to get into some of the finer details of that today. How does Sophia view the self? How could we think about self-leadership with capital S, which is a key concept in IFS? We will talk about, can coaches work with exiled parts? We'll talk a lot about identifying the subtle parts in coaches, in ourselves, that can show up as we work with clients, and some of the key learnings that Sophia has developed from training coaches on how to use parts work in coaching. So let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Sophia Mose. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. Sophia, I'm delighted to be recording this with you and having this conversation. We've had several conversations about internal family systems and coaching, and they've always been really rich. So we decided to record a podcast about it. So we'll explore that topic today. But how are you, first of all?
Yeah, I'm doing really well. I'm just very excited to, again, be doing this with you. This time it's recorded, but for me, it's just, you know, really good to dialogue with you about this topic that I'm so incredibly passionate about, as you know. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure. And, you know, this question just kind of bubbled up for me as I was preparing for our conversation today. And let's see where you take it. But what for you is We've talked about what internal family systems is on the podcast before. I think a lot of people right now, it's exploded in the world. Dick Schwartz has been the originator of this type of parts work, and it's really taking off for good reason. It's very effective and powerful. And so I won't start with the intro of like what is internal family systems, but where I'd love to go today with you is applying it in coaching. So this question came to me: what's the secret or the essence or the real, what is the real secret when it comes to being an effective practitioner of parts work in coaching?
That's a big question. Well, the way I see it is that almost like the most important thing of it is the coach's own system. So there's often in with models and frameworks, there's a huge emphasis on what you're helping the client with. And then there, of course, are the competencies and how you do that. And there's so much literature and ideas about presence and that that's so essential. And for me, what is so incredibly wonderful with IFS, and of course, it's very subtle, it's not a very easy thing, but is that if you work with your own system and you get it's a practice and you get that subtlety of sensing what is going on in you while you're sensing what is going on with the client and the interaction of your either presence and expansive self energy with the client and or your burden parts with the client's burden parts, that's where the richness is. And it's not about always having to be this self-led coach, that is, because that becomes already not self, saying that you always should be self-led. There is a should and there is a manager making you self-led. So I'm already going off on a side path. But in short, the working with the self, with your own self-leadership will automatically mean you are there for the client and you are actively listening and the rest will happen. So that for me is the most important thing of IFS in coaching. So let's say the client doesn't even know what you're doing. They don't have never heard of parts of IFS, but you are fully aware of everything going on in your system and in the client system. And those are assumptions, but you're tracking. That is already, there can be a huge shift. And that's what the experience is in trainings and in supervision and that's it's always back to your own. Back to your own system.
I love that you kind of brought in that we can have, manager parts that look like self. So could you just say what self is, for people listening?
That's those are not those are big questions. So self for me is not like one thing that is the same for everyone, for starters. So I think trying to define what self is very hard. But I do think that what Dick has done and the people who developed the model with him have found an easy way to check for that. So you can say by flipping it around what self is not. So anything that isn't, well, no, let's start with what it is. It's a state or an essence, a state of being, that when you are in that state, that means your system has access to that energy, that source. And what we then notice in ourselves and what others can notice in us is these eight C words that you often hear about, eight words that start with C, for ease of reference, doesn't mean those are the only ones. And especially for the practitioner, the five P's. And The five P's are presence, which again is a little bit like, what is that? But okay, others are maybe easier. True patience, perspective, the ability to zoom out to see the bigger picture, perseverance, and playfulness. So you have access to that creative presence. That playfulness is different from humor. It's you don't have to make a joke or to make a point, but you can become quite creative with clients. You're patient with the client, true patience, not enforced. I am sitting here, I need to wait till they're done talking and I want to interrupt and I'm stopping myself, but the true calm presence of that time disappears. So the eight C's are, often you've had Dick on the show also, you've had David Kitching's, people probably know them, but just to quickly remind listeners, are clarity, curiosity, compassion, creativity, calm, connectedness, courage, and confidence. So, of course, we can't have all of those all be present all the time, but in a coaching conversation, if you, and of course, this is the work we do. We do when we're applying the IFS model, curiosity is such an important one. But if we're just staying with the coach and not talking about the actual inner work with a client, true curiosity and true compassion create such a container that the client is able to then tap into that inside them. So self is not a part. So self does not do. So we coach with part, and that's often a misconception that self is the one doing the coaching. But self is the source that the parts that we coach with. So I'm an example is I'm speaking to you now in English. So my mother language is Dutch. I speak French the whole day because I live in France. Not the whole day. I mean, I speak French regularly. So my language part is doing that. I sometimes say I don't think self speaks French or Dutch or English or whatever other language. It's a part that has had to learn that. So we have a lot of parts that do for us. We're in a human body on this planet and we need to do things. But if those parts have access to that source, which for everyone is a different experience, so it can be very spiritual, it can be quite practical in some people even, but there is this knowing source that if our parts have access to that, this compassionate, loving essence, then they can work in there at their best. So you have full access to your creativity. But the one who, I often, I mean, this is my way of thinking. So who comes up with these really cool coaching questions? Right? You have someone asking a question, it's like, wow, I want to write that down. That was amazing. So, and you hear that it comes from somewhere deep. It's not from on a list on the wall that they quickly look at and they pull it off that list that they learned in there. So that is a combination of parts that have that knowledge. They have done that coaching training. Because someone who has never had any coaching training, who sits in a conversation, can ask deep questions, but it's not as honed as someone who has done the coaching training and the years of coaching. So our parts learn, use creativity, and ask these questions. Self is there as a resource. So that is a little bit how I see it. There's a lot more to it. But that's, and I'm curious, I'm really curious how you see self, because you speak to so many people and so many different versions of source presence that people talk about. So I'm really curious how you see it.
Well, this gets into it gets into the conversation around what are parts, who are we? What is the self? You're starting to articulate this, and in a way, this is where we get into I don't want to philosophize about it too much because I think you've got a lot of really powerful things to say about what you named before about that managers can come in and masquerading as self. And I think that's really powerful. But coming back to your question, I love the inquiry because I hold it lightly, and yet it's something that means a lot to me. Of course, a powerful influence on me has been Steve March and Hamid, A.H. Almas, who created the diamond approach. And what you see if you study a lot of developmental models, spiritual models, that they're people talk about a shift from being in parts or identified with parts with a smaller perspective, but then one can shift into a place of presence. Quality Almas talks about qualities of presence, and I think for me these are different than parts. But I think so when I'm so there can be a sense of presence, a sense of strength, love, compassion, all these kind of virtues, and they have a certain intelligence to them and a certain felt sense of wholeness. And I think that's often where my best coaching comes from. But in the end, I think I think it doesn't matter whether we say they're more the liberated kind of best sides of parts or whether they're presence, maybe it just gets back to what's very practical and applicable. But I think I hold the view that I'm not always in parts, and I think that's maybe different to how Dick might see it or you see it. That it's like, and I've had other guests on the podcast as well who've said this, and I feel like even saying, when we talk about self, which I think is really wise, I love it when you say it's actually difficult to kind of really say what it is because it's maybe not a thing, you can't, but at the same time, when it's there. It's very practical because you can feel it. Well, my sense is maybe sometimes this kind of intelligence that guides the coaching is self. It is a sense of the intelligence of life, and that is where the questions are coming from. But again, that's where we get into kind of maybe more philosophical musings, and we could spend a lot of time kind of trying to debate that. And but I think the real juice is where it gets practical.
One note on that though, because I think it is the same. So, well, and of course, once you're in a model, it's important to stay consistent within that, because if you start mixing ideas, that's where it goes wrong. Because as long as it works consistently, because whatever happens inside is what happens. We aren't creating that. But to grasp it and to teach it to others, which of course is where it becomes important to stay so consistent, because otherwise people get confused. So I'm not saying you're in parts when you're coaching, because that's what's so confusing, because you're not in it. The moment you're in a part, it is blending with you and it has taken over, because then there's one. So it's that team. So the harmony inside you of all that knowledge that has been acquired on this planet comes together with that intuition and that. So it is guided from that point of source and knowing and the larger self out there, whatever that is, but we all know it when we feel it. So those questions come from deep, but it's still a part saying the language, speaking. So, to keep that in mind, that we have to do, to speak, or to, that is a part. It's my language part. So, because I know, for instance, in other models, they will say, oh, but in IFS, yeah, but that's a part. No, people then mix up part with a burden or a strategy. If you say, oh, that's your perfectionist part, no, there is not a perfectionist part that is its own little being. There is a part of you that has taken on a perfectionist strategy to keep another part of you from being triggered. of I'm not good enough or I'm not this enough. So parts take on. So for instance, a part that has as a strength, it uses our strength. So your strength of discernment, of conscientiousness, of appreciating beauty, those essences of you can take on the burden of that all needing to be perfect. And when that burden is released, which you can also call limiting belief in NLP or whatever else you want can phrase that, but to stay in IFS, when that burden is released, that part can go back and be just its original wonderful self. It doesn't have to activate your nervous system anymore. It doesn't have to put you in fight or flight. Tunnel vision, it could go back to being in the green and being its beautiful self. And one thing to confuse, to make it more confusing, parts have self. In our trainings, and you don't hear that a lot out there because it gets so confusing, but you connect from self to a part and you connect to the self of the part, to its essence. So that's IFS. It's very subtle, it's very robust. It's been developed over 40 years with so many people just listening and noticing what goes on in their own system, in the client system, in the outside, how systems interact with systems and with burdens and culture and legacy, intergenerational burdens. So it's incredibly robust, which is why I love it so much. It's so subtle. So I think we're saying exactly the same thing.
Yeah, no, I love it. I first of all, I really appreciate the level of discernment you're offering, and yeah, I feel really aligned with what you're sharing. And there's something very like wholesome about, yeah, there's these parts and they have gifts, and but they take on burdens, you know, and then so we can help them release a burden, and the gift can come online more fully. So yeah, I like that. I come back to that point of, you know, what when I asked that question, what's the you know, it's kind of a provocative question because I know there's many secrets or you know, essences to doing this work, but you talked about the presence of the coach coaching from self, and could you say something about, like, in your, you know, you train coaches to use parts work, to use internal family systems. Do you often see that coaches struggle with that, that they're actually not coaching from self in that way?
It and it's a painful thing. It's when you discover that. I had my own moment where we do our coach training, we do other trainings. You know, coaches typically do lots more trainings, more they love learning more. And they realize, okay, there's the fixer, there's the advisor, there's a lot of don't give advice. You know, there's a lot of those don'ts. And ooh, to pass your ICF, you cannot give your own opinion. You cannot teach. And so we're also aware of those rescuers, fixers, and all those. But then there are the subtle ones that we don't notice and that we think are us, and those parts think they are us. And I'm not saying that that means you're doing a bad job as a coach. But when you encounter that part of you that has been doing the coaching for you, or with certain clients, that can also be it. Certain clients can bring out certain parts that take over. That can be painful because maybe you are an MCC and, at the highest level with the ICF and you're doing great. And then, wow. And those parts themselves don't really like being discovered because they're very good at being in our blind spot. So that is where the real gold is. Once you encounter a part or multiple parts that come up, maybe with certain clients, or maybe when you're tired, because parts live in a body, live in our physiology, and live in our we live our lives in an environment, and we're influenced, and so parts are not static or anything like that. They're very much in the soup of everything else. So maybe when we suddenly have less clients and we start worrying about having enough income, maybe a certain part starts taking over. And that's in IFS what is then called, because they often have qualities of self, or they seem to have. There some of these C or P words, but actually they're not. And that's actually where then the coaching can start getting stuck. And we're like, that client is just not changing. Or you start feeling uncomfortable before you see a certain client. That can be a sign that there's something going on. Or you start getting a little bit critical of a client. And what we call those are self-mirroring or self-like parts. I mean, there are different people calling them different words, because you can say that's not very nice to call the part self-like, it's trying to imitate, but they mirror qualities of self. And of course, those are the hardest to find. And when you do, then working with them and working with them either, first on your own, but usually those you need to support someone else to unburden that part of why it feels it needs to come in, and what is it worried about if it didn't come in and do the coaching for you. And
Well, how would you know like a self-like part is here? You're already speaking to that, but especially the subtle ones. I think like you've named a lot of coaches when they train, they're learning about maybe not working too hard with the client, trying to solve things for them. A part that wants to get it right, very understandable parts to show up when we're learning something new, but these more subtle parts that might still be there with experienced coaches, how do we know when they're there? We maybe they've been there for so long, we just don't even think it's a part.
Exactly. You don't know. So that's why it is so important to go to supervision or to go to mentoring. And where I see them often coming out when I do this coaching practice lab with people who have been trained in either coaches who have done the clinical trainings, which used to be possible, like I did for the IFS clinical. Now that's not possible anymore, and there is the specific coaching training. So people who've gone through that or who have done clinical training and are coaches. So what you see is people will come with a client case, like you have with therapists. They have their supervision and they're like, yeah, and there's just this client really activates me, or I don't understand. They keep talking. And so when you have your own, so if you do that for yourself and you're like, there's just this client where I don't know, afterwards I have a bit of a feeling of it went well, but there's something. Or you start feeling a little bit judgmental about someone. Or you start looking or start feeling sorry for them in a way that maybe is not compassion, but it's a little bit of pity, a bit like, oh, it's so tough for them. Yeah, I feel really for them. Then that means there is a part there, because there isn't that open-hearted compassion anymore. So whenever you start feeling a shift in yourself while you're with the client, maybe you start thinking, God, they're a little bit annoying, or any shift where you're not fully attuned, that is where you can get curious. But you won't notice it. So that, ideally we'd all notice that. So it comes often out in, God, I have this difficult client. So when someone brings that and I ask them, tell me more, what exactly is your challenge there? And then ask them to check into their system, because inevitably something will come out. Yeah, they just won't do what they're saying. They keep committing and they're just not doing it. And it's like, what in you needs them to commit to that? And it turns out there is an efforting part, there is a critical part. They should be doing that. And it may not even be the agenda of fully of that client. Or, there's something there. There will be an interaction there. So at that moment, when you then go deeper and check what that part is worried about, And it's worried that if that client doesn't do what they say they're going to do, it's not at all to worry about the client. It's then they won't think I'm a good coach and I'll lose them as a client. So by looking at the worries that that part has for you, because parts always have a positive intention for you, even if they do the most extreme things that have huge consequences in your life, they mean to help you. They have a hope for you. So their hope is that this client will think you're a really good coach, for instance. So it is wherever you're stuck, and as a short answer, or wherever the client gets stuck, you could get curious.
What I like about this is that I think it's something we can all start to bring awareness to. And I think coaches do this naturally, but to pay attention in a session to where I move out of that state of of alignment, connection, openness, patience, all those words you brought, because I can track that in myself. Like it might be certainly there's a kind of felt sense of tension somewhere in my body. Maybe there's a slight kind of worry comes in, like, oh, I'm not sure what's happening right now. What should I do? Or I start trying to work subtly with a client. I want them to. Maybe I lose that sense of patience, because I want to do the process. All those things. And I think that's a very powerful way to start to be able to pay attention in the moment. Do you invite coaches? What would you invite coaches to do if in a session if they start to notice that?
So that's a big one. So first, to come back to you, of course, it is all also in the body. So it's very much that physical awareness, the of course what Strozzi all teaches, you notice a disconnection of coldness, with the somatic coaching. But it's the ones that are the most important ones are the ones where you're not so aware of it, because those parts are really good at being calm and being patient, but there can be an energy there that makes you calm and patient. So they can be these very subtle presences. They're almost like ghosts. So I think you learn what to do in session. So I'll get back to that. But how you can encounter this is very much by before and after also. And of course, coaches are told to reflect, but what I do, everyone has their own way of doing this, but I scribble before each client who is present, who's there, as we say in IFS, who's there. So before our chat, who's there? Excited parts, nervous parts, they're all there, they're all welcome. Ask them to just give me space. So already that practice makes you more aware, and especially with different clients, what comes up. Because it tends to be with more experienced coaches that these self-like parts aren't always there. They come in with certain clients. So already seeing your nervous system, where is it? Your body, how is it? Is there any muscle tension? And what is there? Scan your body, who's there? Emotions, everything. Then after the session, because we are our evaluator and our negativity bias changes things as we get farther away from a session. But as soon as you can afterwards, reflect how this went, what was there? Was there a part there that I'm curious about? Why was I talking so much? Why did I interrupt them? Anything that's present. So that teaches you to tap in, to go inside and really check in your own system. Otherwise, we start thinking about the client, what they said. No, your own system. And if you have an agreement to record, you can run it now through AI, which can be great. You can do your own supervision with having with the right prompts, have AI do your supervision of your sessions. So of things you don't notice. So you start getting familiar with your system and trusting more and more that if these parts give you space, that it all is okay. So building the trust. Now, then during session, it's the practice of I had a great mentor when I just finished my coach training, and she's like, "Sophia, I notice in you when you get quite excited or curious, or you go forward." But I'm just curious, what is that about? When you coach or whatever, you move forward. She's like, "Check in your body," and that kind of thing of checking that while you're doing, like you say, you notice, you lose, you there's something, there's a shift, whether it is the words you use, the speed of your speaking, the physical sensations. So what in IFS we're taught to do is you track that and you turn towards it. Now, that's easier said than done because that takes time. But the way I see this practice a little bit, as humans, we have this capacity to do things simultaneously. So we can be with a client and we can check our own system without losing connection. And I compare it a little bit to, like, have simultaneous interpreters, people who can listen to Russian and can at the same time translate it into English. I find that always baffling, but that is a training that takes a while. And we're able to do that. And I find this is the same thing. You're translating, you're noticing what's going on in your own body. You're translating that, and you're present with the client and still tracking their parts and their system. So what is very different in IFS, and that takes practice, and a beginning IFS coach should not, cannot immediately do that. But let's say what you earlier said, you feel that you're a bit impatient or you feel something, you check. It can sometimes be also that it's actually in the client and you're just taking that on, that energy from them. But your responsibility is to your own system first. And you're like, okay, I notice I'm actually a bit worried about this thing that's happening after this. I have this big meeting. So you notice that and you're like doing what you do for your system. So I'm just noticing that. And for instance, I may write down a word to just, get me out of it, or you take a breath, but not to get rid of it, but to acknowledge it and to come back to it. So you're like, yeah, that is, but I'm here now with the client. Can you give me space? I'll get back to it. I'll watch the time. I'm not going, okay. Now, if it has actually broken the connection with the client and you don't know that 100% sure, but you may feel something in them because you were just, then, and if you think it's in the interest of the client, it serves them because you've just broken something, we speak for that. So you then say, hey, I'm sorry, I just noticed a part. If you use part language with the client, I just had a part coming in and I just asked it to give me some space. So if you notice that, I apologize and I'm here for you. I'm back. And so often clients will be like, thanks for saying that. I noticed something. And I thought it was me. And sometimes they'll be like, oh, no, it's fine. But maybe they just say, because there's a part that wants to be polite and compliant, and they'll say it's fine, but actually another part may have noticed it. So that is different from most other modalities, as far as I know, that you speak for the part that just took you out. And in addition, I think this for any, and this I think can be helpful for anyone. For instance, if you have something happening outside, like loud noises, or you have like a backache, we know that if we have a lot of pain in the neck or a pulled muscle, that you may pull a face now and then. So I had a chronic back thing for a while. So if that was really painful, I'd say to clients, if you see my face going a little bit like this, it's not you. I just have a lot of pain, And that can be so helpful because otherwise you sit there worrying about it. But also, they may make assumptions because we make assumptions about other people's facial expressions and movement and anything. So then there is this owning that I may pull a weird face, and you preempt any assumptions by parts of theirs that feel not seen or heard. So that's a little, there's a lot to this, can have an entire, hour of conversation just about that, and the tracking your own system, the asking it to give you space. And then one final important thing is, once you notice a part coming in, is to get back to it and to really get to know it and build a relationship, a mutual relationship of trust and understanding. and see what this part's strengths are and how it can maybe actually help you in a session instead of coming in and taking over and taking the keys to the car.
What I like about what you share is you, for me, you're articulating two very important aspects of our growth, which is one is like developmental over time that, you know, you're checking in before a session and afterwards you're noticing what parts may have been activated and then you can, you know, work with those through supervision, through your own coach. And so over time, those parts show up less inside the coaching and self is there more often. But you're also practicing immediate freedom in the sense of inside of the session, you're noticing when you get caught and you're able to develop that dual awareness, you know, where you're still with the client, but you're also managing yourself. I mean, managing might be the wrong, because we're not talking about a managing parts, but you're kind of regulating or being able to shift into a place where you're back in that kind of flow state with your client again. And I think that's very powerful because I think both those aspects of development are important for us all to work with. So, do you think that there are subtle parts that are almost like IFS parts, you know, like they're so in a sense what I'm pointing to is the difference between I'm now a coach who's learned IFS and I'm in my coach doing IFS part, as opposed to I'm actually just in like real deep intimacy with the client in the moment. And that's what's leading. Now all the training is there in the background, but actually it's this attunement that's really leading, and there's real patience and connection and presence.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with any model that we learn that is new, we have first, and with any, often in the trainings in IFS, and I'm sure other trainings do that too, it's compared to learning a new dance. So you learn the steps, and you're very rigid and awkward, and you're standing on people's toes, and you have to learn those steps to be able to do that dance. And then at some point, it flows, and you just do that dance. And you see people like, you're like, wow, this person is so in the moment. And I guess martial arts is the same. You have to learn these, what are they called, katas, or, and that's repetition, repetition, repetition. And then it all flows. So there is awkwardness in the beginning, which is why there's always so much encouragement to practice with peers and step on each other's toes and not on your client's toes. And to really get that supervision and that practice, and also to introduce things, little bits. If you sit there with the protocol and the questions you should ask, and you hear Dick do a demo, and you're going to repeat those questions, Dick Schwartz, the creator of IFS, then it becomes, then it's a part doing it, the doing IFS part, which for for the client is like, what is this? There's a wall in between you and the client. And so that's why I say the work with your own system is so important. And I don't think you should be working with clients, firefighters, managers, their protective parts, or their vulnerable exiles, if you haven't done that work yourself.
Yeah.
Because then it definitely becomes very cognitive, and it's just a, analytical cognitive part, protocol, driven, which is not coaching.
It's the same with clients as well, that you can feel when they're kind of conceptually talking about a part or self, as opposed to when they're like in self or with a part. And it's like the practice takes on its own life, you know, rather than the feeling that sometimes you're working at doing parts work. You know, it's like it's unnaturally unfolding, and that actually you have to do very little in a sense as the coach, even though it's really your access to presence, which is that container that's allowing them to fully be in their process as it unfolds.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I love so much about IFS. You don't have to say much. You can once there, and that is once there is a true self to part and part to self connection, that mutual connection is there. It unfolds, to use Steve March's word, which I think describes it so well, because you really see like a flower, or it just happens, because it's not us making it happen. That when there is self to part connection, when there is relationship, just like with humans on the outside, when there is that connection on the inside, things happen. The update happens. Oh, there is this source. It's not just this other part I've been fighting with and stuck with for 30 years, trying to battle each other or keep each other away. There is this source, and that happens. So you don't have to do anything as a coach. You're not doing that, because that would be one of your own burden parts, trying to accomplish something inside the client system. It happens. What the coach's role there is the facilitation. If a part comes in and disrupts that, is spotting that and gently getting the space back in for the magic to unfold. But we're not doing IFS. The connection is happening, and we facilitate that moment of connection, or a little update, because it doesn't have to all, it could be tiny little shifts, but we facilitate those shifts and the update of outdated patterns and burdens that were, the strategies were necessary at a time. They don't serve anymore. So yes, that's a long question to, at the start, it is very normal for parts to come in. Having said that, we don't need 100% of self-leadership for things, for magic to happen. What we say in IFS is a critical mass of self. And critical mass, some people don't like that word at all, but it is in a, the moment that the shift can happen. So if there's an opening there, so you may still have a bit of an efforting part there as a coach also, or the client may still have a bit of something there, a bit of a critical, or there is, if there is enough, some curiosity, some compassion, the part will receive that and shifts will happen.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. I'd love to ask you about direct language, directive language, because I think it fits well with what we're talking about in the sense of, could you say something about how when we are le not in that critical mass, using directive language maybe can feel very different than when we are. And what would you say about using directive language in IFS and the role of
Yeah.
self?
Yeah, that's a big one, of course, for people learning IFS. Maybe from doing workshops, or from clinical trainings, or wherever they get their training, and it's or they see just demos online, and they will see that language, which in the clinical protocol can be very directive. So that made me actually so curious. That was my biggest struggle, because I was a coach. I had the incredible fortune that I, or at the time, that I could do level one, level two, level three. They would take for each training about three non-therapists, licensed mental health providers. But as a coach, I was like, what? This is not okay. You're
We get that too, from our community. Like, hey, you can't do this. The coaches can't direct. Yeah.
This is not ICF. So that got my sort of lawyerly research parts like really fascinated. So why is there such a thing of no closed questions? What is behind that? Why is there no direction? What does that really mean? And so it's a chapter in my book, as you will understand, because it's really, really rich and interesting. So to get back to what we were just saying, if you have that presence and you're really self-led, because in self is something that's not really used a whole lot anymore, because when you're fully in self, that's actually, to me, that's non-duality. You're just sort of a lake, or you just, if I were now fully in self, 100%, I couldn't talk to you because I'd just be off in La La Land, just in happy land. So you're self-led. Self is leading the part. If that's the case, your cadence, your voice, the energy is such that if you use words that on paper, just in a transcript, would be like, what? That's really directive. And you hear Dick and others do that. Tell the part. It will just be tell the part to give you some space. It's like if you see that written down, what? You're telling the client to tell it. But the way it comes from someone who's truly self-led, it's, yeah, tell the part that, it will be an invitation. Tell it that, it's like, why don't you tell it that? Now, that takes a long time for that to come out in a way that also the coach feels comfortable with it. So, and this may be controversial in the IFS community, I feel that you can get the same without needing to use the directive language. So as a therapist, you can do that. You have a different role. As a coach, and that is the, what at the institute we developed for the coach training, there are ways to do that in an inquisitive, in an invitational way that is more explicitly invitational and coach consistent. And you can get to the exact same outcome. Now, the additional benefit that I noticed for my own system, because I was trained in the clinical way, so I used to say, tell the part, ask the part, but maybe with a little bit more coachiness around it. But if you go fully to coaching consistency language, that it actually so much more, I don't know, it keeps you more in self-energy yourself as the practitioner. Because there is some kind of biofeedback with the words you use and what your own, how your own, I don't know, your brain, your system perceives that. So you know that if we know it from body posture, that if you collapse yourself like this, you start feeling a certain way. And if you smile, you start feeling better. So I have a sense, and I've looked at, there isn't a whole lot of research on this. It would be great for someone to do a PhD on this, but the language you use, the words, because of course there's tone, there's cadence as well, that also affects you. But even the words we use affect our own parts. So let's say you have quite a, well, as a coach, you always are at risk of having an expert part. Like, I know better than the client. I know this model. I know what should happen in their system. So if you use language that is more consistent with expertise, which is like, tell it to do that. So if you use those words and you repeat them, you actually will get those parts coming up. And in the client, of course, things happen too, but that there is more research on the effect. And for instance, Richard Boyatzis with his positive emotional attractor and the way you are, but also the words you use, those all have influence on how that lands in the client's system, but it also affects you. So I actually think that coaching has things to offer to clinical IFS in how to phrase things, because coaching psychology is so advanced and sophisticated on the interaction between, keeping it invitational, the coach not being the expert. There's so much richness there. So the what does that mean for the coach who is learning? Like you say, your amazing training, Symphony of Self, is that what it is? With all these different practitioners using parts work. And then when you get to IFS and people look also online at demos, they start using that language. And I'm not saying it's wrong to use that, but for beginners, I would really encourage people to find a way to do this in a coach consistent way. Not, I don't care about the ICF competitions. I mean, I care about them because I think they're amazing and there's a lot of research behind them. And I mean, not for that reason specifically, not for like passing an assessment, but really for honing your own skills of that true curiosity. Because if you repeat that language, where's your curiosity of just coming up with your own question? That will have the same effect. So yeah, it is. I think it's a big deal because when you're new, like you say, you get your IFS parts coming up. I'm doing the protocol. I'm doing this. I'm doing parts work. If on top of that you start using language that is quite directive, then it
It
becomes
could feel
very
quite
hard to
jarring.
stick. Yeah.
Like my, because this is great. I feel that combination between being in self and then so having an invitational request, like how would it be to let this part know? They're just kind of little phrases, but they feel very resonant with that self-ledness that you're talking about, where it's like you're making an invitation, but it's like how you could try, or how there's no formula for exactly. It's more in the energy of how it's said, but those, I find that to be, because I notice when someone works with me in that way and they use those phrases, it makes a difference, because I feel like I've got a choice. If I feel like I'm being told to do something, you've got to get that right. You see, if you're being told to do something, and Dix is very masterful, so for him, and he has a lot of authority, so people trust him, so it really works, but. If it's not quite right, if someone tells you what to do, it can bring up a part that's like, well, I'm not doing that, so.
So you either get rebel parts, rebellious parts, because your autonomy is being taken away. So you will get a rebellious part coming up in some people, but you also get compliant parts, pleaser parts. And that is the big risk with IFS that, there has to be real permission of the system to do this because it's deep, it's unusual. We didn't grow up with multiplicity. So also when you contract to do IFS, it's really important to not force parts language on people and to just flow out of it if you notice that that isn't landing and to just switch back to a coaching question where you, instead of the part, you just say you. And of course, when someone is fully blended with a part, you do that anyway. You just say you, which is a whole separate issue of blended parts dialogue. But the interesting thing is also for your own system is when you say, I'm wondering, it gives you space. I'm wondering, what would that part need to give you some space? So you don't even have to say, I wonder if it could give you some space, but what would it need to give you space? So you're having the client then really check with that part what it needs, instead of also ordering that part to step aside, because that one part may not want to step aside. So there's a lot around this. But if you are starting out and you're saying, yeah, but Dick Schwartz does it. I get quite resistant sometimes with this. People get irritated, like, who are you to tell me that I shouldn't, But I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. And when you're new to a model, I think it takes 3 to 5 years before you're fully comfortable with IFS. For our systems who were raised in this monomind, northern, global, the way, or let's say just capitalism, as the whole structure around it, of how we were raised, the whole Cartesian mindset, everything. There's so much there. It's a big shift for our own systems to really feel, and for our skeptical parts to be, this is okay. For our, the early years, I would be in the middle of a session, and I wonder if you ever have this. This is such a fascinating one. I get this part coming up, like, what are you doing? This is all fake. This is so weird. What is this? You know, the surreal, like, you know, the surreal the parts of this is not really happening. And it doesn't come up anymore, but it took years before that one was finally fully trusting that this is really how we are. It's not something you're doing, you're not making it up, it's not a circus trick. This is what we are as humans and how we heal and how we thrive and transform. And it takes a while.
Beautiful. I think that insight of multiplicity of selves combined for me with this sense that we're always co-arrive, different selves arrive in different contexts, and that there's not this kind of, mono self that's like necessarily consistent everywhere. And that's I found very liberating. And because it frees me up, there's a playfulness that can come in. I can work more freely with the patterning and energy of the moment. I want to bring in a like just one last topic, and probably it's like we're teeing it up for a part two at some point maybe, but you're like a common the most common question we get when it comes to IFS and coaching and parts work is, can coaches work with exiles? What they call exiles. And I know you've been training coaches around that. What's your take on that?
That is again one of those really big ones. And also, of course, firefighters. There can be very extreme firefighters because there is this, oh, exile, scary. Firefighters are the one that can do a lot of harm to the person or to others, you know, rage, substance abuse, all that. So when we speak about scope of practice, that is sometimes gets forgotten. But if firefighters are quite strong, then that means there is a lot of pain underneath. Otherwise, it wouldn't need to be so strong. So coaches work with strong emotions. We do. So saying like not working with exiles would be like chopping off an arm of something, of, you know, it's there. So people come sometimes into a session blended with an exile. If something has just happened at work or in their fam in their life, there can be lots of tears in coaching sessions. Now, when people say on the clinical side, and when we also, and the institute is like, coaches, be very careful with exiles. It means that if you really use the model to go to them as a target them. You know, we often say that we're working with the target part, that is like the topic for the session. You then go deeper, you go a level more of contracting. It's not just the topic contracting, it's the specific part you contract for. To get curious about and to learn about and to support. So for clinical folk, it is really important to, because the person is not thriving, is not often even functioning, or, you know, is a danger to themselves. So the priority is unburdening the exile. In coaching, we work with a very different client base and we work with a very different scope and different agreements. So the exiles come up, they're there. So I think it's very important for coaches to know how to work with exiles, but not to, unless, you know, they have a lot of training. And then this is for all scope of practice and referring. What is your training? What is your own skills? And what have you worked with your own system? So I guess one, if we go into more specificity, I do not think anyone, whether they are a therapist or a coach, should work with IFS and exiles if they haven't unburdened their own exiles yet. So if you have not had that experience, you shouldn't work with a client with that. That's one thing. I think that's pretty basic. It seems basic. You'll be surprised how often that, you know, that rule is not adhered to. So I think it's really important, and we did in the institute with the institute. You know that I designed with Anna Tansey the after the pilot. You know, we redesigned the whole training to be even more coaching consistent. And there are Excel steps in what we're teaching, with lots of conditions. If you know you have. I mean, trauma-informed is like the final stage, but if you have the sufficient, if you have done your own work, you have sufficient trauma training to be not just trauma-aware, which I think is the first one. Trauma-informed is like very advanced, but trauma-sensitive, trauma-reactive, so that you know when someone gets flooded. And you refer to that also with David Kitchings in his conversation. So you've gone through that, so you listeners have probably heard this many times, but if you have all that training and skills, then you can work with Excels as a coach if you have contracted that also. So there has to be that full system-wide permission that we get in IFS, that you really check whether all parts are okay with this, and you can check that with the self energy. How do you feel towards this part? Also need to know the difference between a protector and an Excel, which isn't always very clear because they can be really entangled with each other. That protector can be so around the Excel, and then it turns, you don't sometimes don't know the difference. So again, after a lot of training. So I don't think if you've done our training was 7 training days with in between sessions of practice, and that you then just go out and work with people's Excels. No. But if you have been doing this for years and years and you're trauma aware and you are with a client where there is an agreement, you can do it still in a coaching consistent way. By invitations, and when someone is connected, it happens. It's, I mean, who are we to stop that?
That's a really good point, because my experience has been exiles show up, and it would be more harmful in that moment to go, oh, okay, stop, this is not okay anymore. That's more traumatizing to an exile than
That's exiling the exile from the coaching conversation.
And speaking from my personal experience of being of doing parts work with a very skillful coach, I must admit, very experienced. But and so the topics we were working on were leadership topics, and there was often an exile in there. And I found it to be just so beautiful to be able to have those exiles to be met from self, and incredibly healing, and not a scary experience. I'm not saying that that it's not intense for some people. Of course, like there are a very wide range of different parts, but I think sometimes coaches can be overly scared about this, about exiles, and that it's going to be very intense. And so all the things you've said, I'm just fully behind, like you have to be doing your own inner work, working with your own exiles. It's like getting the right training, knowing your capabilities, all that is just goes without saying. And the thing I found was, like, I wasn't with the coach I worked with, we weren't using, like, exiles would often unburden by themselves,
Spontaneously,
spontaneously. And that was not only not scary, but it was actually an incredibly, incredibly meaningful experience to feel what you shared at the beginning, that these parts, these exiles that, would often, like, be either looking very young or like have a kind of lifeless feeling, and then they come alive and they feel seen. And then what you said earlier is, like, often they would transform into almost like, I don't know, to put it, like a transpersonal kind of form. I had parts that became like what do you call them, Pokemon character like, and so
metaphors of that the brain produces for to represent the energy. It is really so beautiful.
So, my sense is, like, of course there are all different types of coaches with different scopes, and but that there are more coaches who are interested, especially in our times where we're going through a huge disruption and clients are coming in dysregulated, with exiles activated, that it can really serve clients, that there are exiles we can meet
All
without
parts
targeting
welcome.
them, but that are related to leadership topics.
And there are different degrees. So all parts welcome. And if a client feels that they can bring that into the space, and then there's a different degrees of engaging them of your own skills and your own parts comfort with that. Because like you say, some people have parts that are scared of exiles. So that means they have to work with that fear in themselves. They have parts that are scared of their own exiles. So the people who have fear of coaches working with exiles, there's something in their own system that thinks that exiles are really scary things because they're not. They're vulnerable little versions of us who are still stuck in time. That's all. And yes, if there is like serious trauma around that, there needs to be someone who can hold that. And that often is then more a therapist. But that doesn't make them, it's, and that is because of the reaction to the pain of the exile by the protectors. So it's the protectors there that actually are the ones that cause the backlash because they are so scared of that exile. The protectors are scared of it. But the exile is a frozen. It's not, it doesn't have to be fully frozen, but it tends to be in a state of freeze and can then unfold and quite easily in systems where there is more access to self energy, because it's not that some people have more self energy than others, it's just the access to it, where there is more space, which is usually the case in coaching clients. There can be very hidden, very, of course, hidden trauma, protected trauma, but the systems we work with, there tends to be that access. It can be super easy. I've had it like just that in one session, a full, working with, or that happens often. I've even had it in the first session with a client that there's a full unburdening. Someone who's never heard of IFS, never heard of parts, had no idea, and there you go. So, but there is this. I have also worked with clients, and everyone will have, where they function very high functioning in the sense of, high functioning. They have like big jobs, make lots of money, and seem on the outside to have everything together. Those are incredibly strong managers that keep everything together sometimes and hide enormous trauma. So that's why it's so important to be so informed. Like you've said, many times yourself and others, and David Kitchings, I think if people have curiosity around this, is to listen to that episode. Because I think he does a really good job in, both of you of going into this. But yes, I think we have a duty to teach coaches how to work with exiles in the world we live in and the times we live in. It would almost be criminal not to, because that's where the gold is.
It feels like a beautiful place to end our conversation for now. I just really enjoyed the this air of, maybe it's, I don't know if it's self or what, but just there's been a really sweet, sweet feeling through our conversation, Sophia. I just want to appreciate you for the depth of your commitment to this practice, and your deep sincerity and passion for it as well, and translating it into coaching. It's a real gift.
Thank you, Joel. Well, I want to thank you because since the years that I first discovered IFS, I coincided with me starting to listen to Coaches Rising. I think because Dick was like the first time he was on with you or something like that. And every time I would go to the gym or I was in the car, I'd always listen to the episodes and I could hear your passion for IFS. and how you were asking questions. And that's how we first got in touch as well. So I owe so much to your conversations for my own, work and understanding of how to make coaching work, IFS work in coaching. So lots of gratitudes from my part for what you do.
Yeah, beautiful. Where can we, people listening, if they want to contact you or learn more about you, or you have a book you're writing as well, where can we find out more about you?
God, I'm writing my book, IFS in Coaching, or about IFS in Coaching. That will still be a little bit. Yes, my website is just sophiamoos.com. Very basic, sort of DIY job. Did it myself, and I do practice labs. But in general, and a newsletter people can sign up for. I love. I'm going to do more writing. Just really love it. But my biggest passion is just being with clients and with groups. And the combination of it all. So that's the easiest. I'm on LinkedIn if people want to link. Just Sophia Mo is easy to find.
Beautiful. Thank you,
Yeah.
Sophia.
Thanks, Joel.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is for me the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this. And it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches. Because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are, we're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.